T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jonah Carey's on Twitter at Jonah Carey. He is part of the Jonah Carey podcast. It's nice how that worked out, coincidentally, in that regard. He is of CBS Sports, and he joins us on Fridays on the Bernstein and McKnight show to talk baseball. Welcome, Jonah.
How's it going?
It's great, but not for the Dodgers. The news of the day, Kenley Jansen, as of now, sidelined what is believed to be about a month for what is sounds a little scary, but they say is a relatively easy to control heartbeat irregularity. What does this mean for the race?
Yeah, well, first of all, it happened a couple times earlier in his career as well, and as you said, it was something they were able to control, and a previous absence did last a month, so that might be correct, and it's a precaution. You know, the Dodgers have quietly built a really good bullpen. They made a trade with the Reds earlier this season to pick up a couple quality relief pitchers. Even if they didn't go after kind of the name brand closers, they made a point of surrounding the bullpen with a bunch of quality arms. So now the question really becomes, okay, they've only got one established closer. Now we're going to put it to the test. You know, Oakland has like seven now after acquiring Fernando Rodney. So do the Dodgers, can they do a good job, you know, not having the typical fire-breathing closer music kind of guy? And the answer might very well be yes, because they've just got so many options out of the bullpen. I mean, heck, when their whole starting rotation is healthy, they actually have too many starters. They could even move, you know, Walker Buehler or something like that to the pen too. So probably it's going to be okay, but, you know, any kind of doubt is an issue because this race is so, so close. The Diamondbacks are right there with the Dodgers, and it's going to be maybe the most competitive divisional race in all of baseball.
Jonah, I've kind of been working through some stuff today, and I was wondering maybe we could just kind of talk it out, you and I. I was looking at a list that Joe Sheehan tweeted out. Ferguson Jenkins, Ron Santo, Buddy Bell, Joe Torre, Wilbur Wood, Toby Hera, and Felix Hernandez are our players with the most war, career war, without reaching the postseason. Felix goes to the bullpen, and I'm afraid it's just, I wonder how you look at his career and how the Mariners did or did not put things around Felix. I just so enjoyed watching him start games for 10 years, and now it seems like that phase is over.
Yeah, you and me both. I mean, he's always been one of my favorite players. My friend Dave Cameron, who now works for the Padres, longtime Fangraphs, is the one who dubbed him King Felix, and he was literally, not Cameron, Felix was literally 17 years old at the time, was a minor league prospect. So it's kind of amazing, that kind of longevity, and it does feel like the end of an era a little bit. The 11 runs in his most recent start, I mean, it just felt like they needed to make the change. But they're 2.5 out of the wild card. I mean, they're right there with Oakland, despite all that, despite the volatility and things of that nature. So maybe he can be a weapon out of the pen. He's got a bunch of different tricks in his bag, even if he doesn't throw 95, 96 anymore. Maybe he'll thrive throwing 15 pitches at a time. I'm, as you guys know, a staunch believer that relievers are just basically starters who can't cut it, whether they can't cut it anymore or they never could. That's fine. So maybe he tweaks his repertoire, and maybe coming out of the pen, he becomes a weapon. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where the Mariners haven't made the postseason in a long time, but it's still right there for them, and he could be a guy who helps contribute, even if it's not in his traditional role.
Should they have done things differently in Seattle, knowing they had him? I mean, I know they made some signings, and you had some moves put together, Robinson Cano and whatnot, but or was that front office always just kind of weird and beset by guys who thought they knew what they were doing and lied about it?
Well, I mean, they made some disastrous trades, right? The Eric Bedard trade, so giving up the whole career of Adam Jones, basically, for a guy who gave you, I don't know, a handful of starts. That was one. And there were other little ones that traded away Oscar Balcarat, Cabrera for very little. There's just like all these little deals that added up to a lot, and it hurt them. You know, you just can't keep misfiring that way, and they've gone through a bunch of regime changes. And it seemed like Zarensic had it figured out that after, you know, the Bavesi era, here comes Zarensic, and he's going to do some things well. Here was a guy who was a player development and scouting guru. I mean, Milwaukee, Fielder Braun, all those guys were Jack Z guys. And then he goes into Seattle, and it's the same goal. We're going to do it through player development. But, like, Mike Zunino is the crown jewel of that effort. It kind of leaves you lacking a little bit. So they just misfired. And no matter – especially if you're not the Yankees and Red Sox, but even if you are, if you don't draft and develop well, you just can't sign enough guys to make up for it. You just cannot – and Seattle's paying for it. It doesn't show up right away because, you know, a draft, it takes 4, 5, 6 years to usher a guy into the big leagues. But if the drafts keep not producing for years and years and years, here's where you are. DePoto, give him credit. I mean, he got Mitch Haniger. He got some other guys through trades, through other acquisitions to try to cover up for the shortcomings of previous regimes. But it might add up to just a very good team that falls a little bit short of the postseason.
When we were talking about Felix Hernandez earlier, Jonah, I called up his baseball reference stat comps. And on that list, the top 10, there's John Lester. And at number one for the full career comp, the number one is Cole Hamels. And Hamels' name came up this morning. Ron Coomer of our Cubs broadcasts was talking about him. And he mentioned the phenomenon of a veteran player coming off of a losing team and going to a winning team and feeling re-energized, feeling the significance of games when he goes to the ballpark. And I'm wondering, do we know whether or not there's evidence of that phenomenon being true? And is it predictive of improvement? Do we know that, hey, look, this is, we can bet on getting a bounce from this guy who's got a certain proven history that when it's more competitive, he gets more out of it? Or do we like to think that?
Yeah, I think we cherry pick examples. I mean, Jonathan Scope comes over from Baltimore. They were even worse than Texas. He just drove in his first run as a Brewer last night. You know, that's 10 days that he had in one RBI. And I grudge that RBI is not the end-all, be-all measure. But we're just looking for examples to support our hypothesis. It's like anything else. It sounds good. It might even be right in the case of Cole Hamels. You just can't predict that. It's the same thing as leadership or anything else. You say, well, we want to have veterans on our team because they're going to provide the kind of know-how and leadership that other guys don't. And then, you know, on the one hand, you'll have a team that doesn't go anywhere with a bunch of old guys, and you'll have a team that does, and you'll say, well, look at the team that does. Obviously, it works. Obviously, it works. So it's hard to say. Ron Coomer knows more about baseball than I could ever hope to know. I played 1 year of Little League and was terrible, and I grant you all that. But we just don't have any solid information about it. But what we can say about Hamels is that, you know, he's certainly been pitching better. I mean, you look at just his command has been really good. 11 strikeouts in 10 innings. He has no home runs allowed so far. It might be possible that he's re-energized. It might also be possible that Texas, which actually, according to Park Effect, is even worse than Coors Field. It's actually the worst park in baseball for pitchers. Maybe just getting out of that place does wonders for your head and for your arm. Because, you know, if we think of Coors Field as being the death zone, and here comes a ballpark that, according to the scale, is even worse, wow, I mean, that's got to be a big relief for anybody to get out of Texas.
Talking baseball with Jonah Carey, as we always do on a Friday afternoon on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. I'm looking at Bryce Harper's numbers since that home run derby win. Slash line looks good, 339, 447, 677. What do you make, Jonah, of this Washington Nationals team since it's come out? The results haven't been as solid as Bryce Harper's numbers have, but still they've righted the ship some. Is this a team that can claw their way back in?
Well, they were just underperforming for a while. You know, they were missing Strasburg, but other than that, they had all hands on deck. And, you know, they're starting to get a little better. Daniel Murphy's also been part of it. Murphy was a non-factor. He was out for a long time. Then he comes back, and he just was not the same Daniel Murphy. This is an elite player when he's at his best. And now they're starting to put it together just because the pieces are all there. It's good to see, if you're a Nationals fan, that you've got the guys that you would expect to lead you. You know, your best players would be there. Look at their bench, right? I mean, Zimmerman's back. So they've got Adams and Reynolds sitting off their bench. That is like old school, serious pinch hitting power that could do them a lot of good, or making double switches or doing lots of things that other teams just don't have. Most teams have a backup catcher, a utility guy who hits 220, you know, some defensive replacement for a fourth outfielder, and then 97 relievers. This is a team with a real bench, with real bats, real depth. As far as their bullpen goes, yeah, they traded away Kinsler, but they kept everybody else. Granted, Herrera just went on the DL. So they've got pieces here. I mean, it's certainly conceivable that they can get back into the race. It's not like the Braves are unbeatable or whatever. I don't know if they could chase down two teams in the NL East. Maybe they can. But the wild card is there for the taking, too. You could beat Milwaukee. You could beat Arizona. These teams can be caught. So, yeah, still a lot of baseball left to be played. 40 games, you could do a lot of damage in that stand.
Said that because I mentioned earlier that I felt weird because when they come to town, they register in my mind as more formidable than maybe they actually are. But you're maybe justifying that fear a little bit.
Yeah, the talent is. I mean, listen, we came into the season, we thought they'd be an odds-on favorite, And that did two things. Number one, it underestimated the Phillies and the Braves. So, gosh, what a great story both those teams have been. And number two, it just overestimated the continuity. If you look at Bryce Harper's career, it's so weird. Go look at it. It's like, okay, go to the playoffs and fall short. Go to the playoffs and fall short. Then miss the playoffs completely for some mysterious reason. Then go to the playoffs and fall short. Then miss the playoffs mysteriously for some reason again. If this happens, this would be the third time that a loaded Nats team led by Bryce Harper after success would suddenly just come out flat. And you can't blame it on Matt Williams, and you can't blame it on Dusty Baker, and you can't blame it on Davey Martinez, because it's the same players. It's the managers change and everything, and they bring in new personnel or whatever. But, you know, at a certain point, this era has to be marked off as a failure. And the Bryce Harper legacy, the Bryce Harper era in Washington, does not look all that awesome. And it's never one guy in baseball. It's always a supporting cast and this and that. That's true. But bottom line here is they just have come up short, and is very disappointing and discouraging if you're a Nats fan.
Our conversation with Jonah Carey brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, making big plans for their 25th anniversary. Get your season tickets now. Receive exclusive benefits. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES.
Jonah, the Cubs are playing a high-stakes game of wait and see with Chris Bryant at this point. And I know that, you know, we don't know the medicals. Really, only Chris knows the medicals to this point. But we had Jed Hoyer on the show the other day. And I asked him if there's going to come a point where you guys, the medical staff and Chris, have to say, well, maybe 80% or 75% of a healthy Chris Bryant is worth putting on this roster for a playoff run, for the playoffs themselves. Do you hear around baseball GMs start to make those decisions at this point? What would you do if you had a Bryant that wasn't 100% and a Cubs team that might need 75% of Chris Bryant late in this season?
Well, they have to make the playoffs, first of all. They're only two games up on the Brewers, and if they don't win the division, they've got, you know, a cast of thousands chasing them. There's so many teams in this wild card race. It's as bunched up as any that I can remember. And, you know what, they lose 5 out of 6, and they could be facing going home in October. This is serious business. So I grant you that, you know, 75% of Bryant could be worth it. The good news for the Cubs is that they've been able to cover. They've got a bunch of guys across the diamond, you know, who could do a good job. Ben Zobrist is back to being Ben Zobrist, which means he can cover 30 positions, which means that the Cubs can slide over whoever they want. And Zobrist is hitting, too. I mean, gosh, we can't say enough about the emergence of Javi Baez. We're talking about an MVP candidate. Before, we were talking about a guy who applied cool, quick tags and was flashy and also swung at everything outside the zone. I mean, this is an elite player now. So that's exciting. And Almora has been pretty good. And, you know, they're up here and there, although he's cooled off, has given him contributions. So this is just a better overall team, I think, on the lineup side. But, of course, they're missing, you know, a guy who's an MVP-caliber player. So, yeah, there's no easy answer. And the problem with shoulders and wrists and anything to do with arms, shoulders, wrists, elbows, anything that you have is that you just don't know. Sometimes it could be a year to heal. A guy can come back and he can look all right. He fills out his uniform fine, but he just doesn't have the same oomph that he has, you know, if he's 100%, and that can often require surgery or literally months of rehab. So I don't think they're going to get 100% of Chris Bryant, even if they wait till October 1. I just don't see. Again, I'm not a doctor, but typically that's how these things go, and that's been the scuttlebutt in the industry is Bryant has diminished this year. So, yeah, I think that at some point you roll the dice and you trust that it's not going to be permanent damage, right? It's not a pitcher and he's got a throbbing forearm and you worry about Tommy John surgery. It's a guy who's probably going to get this cleaned up in the offseason one way or another. And maybe you just go for it. Whether that's now or later is a tough question, but it's going to be at some time. I don't think they're going to wait too much longer.
We talked to Jed Hoyer at length yesterday, and he characterized this current waiver environment as busy. He said there's a lot going on, that there are claims being put in. Obviously, the Cubs, with their record, are not going to be in a position to win many of those claims. But he said that there's a lot happening right now. Why do you think that is, and how do you think this shakes out, maybe involving any of the contenders?
Yeah, well, there are more contenders. I mean, that's the bottom line. I just mentioned Oakland picking up Rodney. You know, that's one. Three Tigers just cleared waivers, so that's interesting. You can go with Zimmerman or Iglesias. There's guys like that. And I think teams are just more eager to put guys out there too. It's more potential buyers, but also the sellers saying, hey, let's see what happens, and just kind of put everyone out there. And, you know, it gives teams opportunities. I think some teams probably held back some of their capital. I think they're literally budgeting, you know, if the owner says you got 150, okay, we're going to spend 142 and wait and see what happens. And now they've got some money burning a hole in their pocket too. But in the National League alone, here are the teams in contention: Phillies, Braves, Nationals, Cubs, Brewers, Cardinals, Pirates, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, Rockies, and maybe not the Giants, but even if it's not the Giants, that's 10 teams in the National League alone that could make a realistic claim to being a playoff contender. That's just really, really unusual. And in the American League, granted that we've basically got six teams vying for five spots, and when we say six teams, we're really boiling it down to Oakland and Seattle for the second wild card, but Cleveland needs to get better. I mean, they have holes in their offense. And, you know, the Yankees are being buried by the Red Sox, and they have to ask themselves, are we good enough? So they're going to make moves. And Houston's always trying to be acquisitive, and Boston literally might be the best team in baseball history. They have a shot at 116 or 117 wins. So it's just one of those things where teams are saying, wow, it's anybody's ball game, whether it's for a wild card or a division or the World Series, and we're going to be aggressive. It's just a lot of fun, frankly. And, you know, don't forget, last year it wasn't as busy overall, but how many deals have been more impactful as a waiver deal than Justin Verlander on August 31st? They literally won the World Series, and now Verlander is one of the best pitchers in baseball. So maybe the big one is yet to come. Maybe it is Bryce Harper. Maybe it is Josh Donaldson. Maybe we see some big, big, big deals in addition to a whole bunch of Fernando Rodneys.
Given all of that and the way the playoffs are shaped now and the way the league has kind of turned a little bit, would you move the deadline back if you were given unilateral power to do so?
No, I mean, I like this. I get that it syncs up pretty well with the September roster expansion and whatever, and I think it gives teams an opportunity here, you know, to take two bites at the apple. It is a little bit of an arcane rule that you have waiver and non-waiver deals or whatever, but I think as long as deals can be struck, I don't have a problem with it. And the fact that it is so active reinforces that July 31st does not need to be an end-all or be-all. And going back to Washington yet again in this conversation, this is exactly the kind of team for whom, you know, having that early deadline lets you hedge a little, early non-waiver deadline lets you hedge a little bit, because at that point they're like, well, we're not going to trade Bryce Harper. We don't know what's going to happen. So give the team 3 or 4 weeks to figure it out. And this is like, you know, July 31st trade deadline light. You can still put guys out there if need be. So, yeah, because it is so bunched up, you know, better to go almost all the way to the end of the season. And it's not too bad. And I think that having that kind of scaled trade deadline issue where it's July is one set of rules and August is another, it really gives teams more time to think. That's all right. I don't mind that.
Jonah, thank you, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too. Thanks,
that is Jonah Carey of CBS Sports, brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma today. Credit Karma, get knowing. I know what you're saying. You're saying, wait a sec, Bernstein, you said you had all that stuff to give away and two of the coolest things you haven't given away yet. Well, still remaining in the next less than half an hour, a pair of tickets to see Smashing Pumpkins at United Center and a chance to host your fantasy football draft party in a private suite at Soldier Field on August 18th, with food and beverage included and access to the Scores panel of experts. When we come back, we are going to give away those Smashing Pumpkins tickets.
Something Jonah said there actually kind of caught my interest, and maybe it's something we'll talk about in relation to these Cubs and Nationals going to take place just this afternoon here. I was a little surprised that he wouldn't have moved the deadline. I mean, if I gave him the magic wand, if I gave him unilateral power, he was fine with where it's at.
He would just put Tim Raines in the Hall of Fame again.
Well, over and over and over again. Yep. And that's fine. They deserve to be there. I'd move it. I'd move the deadline, and I'd still have, if you want to do this waiver thing, I'd probably do that too. I'd change the priority level a little bit, you know, having to go through one league and then the other. I'd definitely mix that up some, because that's as arcane as it gets when you get to the waiver rule. But why not move this back? You'd still do both. I know we moved up the season some with the extra off days. You know, we played some games in March this year, and we're going to do that again next year, it looks like. But I wouldn't mind moving the deadline, even if it's a week, and then do a waiver deal after that. I love the two bites at the apple. I think that's a smart way to do it, because you know, Bud Selig created more and more teams available and in this deadline. I'd like to see more action. I don't know if that's just because, I don't know if that's something you feel or care about necessarily, but I have always loved that part of the season more than maybe any other part save the playoffs. I love that trade deadline. I love the rumors flying around, and it's such an exciting time of the summer. I think if you did that for longer, you create more opportunities for teams to get into and out of it. I would move it back.
He is Connor McKnight, and if you are like Connor, you are a fan of the Smashing Pumpkins. Or is it just Smashing Pumpkins or the Smashing
Pumpkins? Smashing Pumpkins. You are a fan of
I don't want to add a the if there's not a the.
Yeah, I always
I believe
get
it is just
wrong.
Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. So I want to be fair to Billy Corgan, who I once interviewed at the Old Score Studios. He sat in and...
Good interview, bad interview.
He was fine. It was early in the morning, and
maybe not ready to be there.
Wanted to talk a little Bulls. He was much younger too. He just sort of had started on the scene. It's not the current.
Oh, you're talking a long time.
At Belmont.
Oh wow.
Oh yeah, this is 95. I think it was my first year. It was on a Saturday morning or something like that. He happened to be around. Because remember when we were with XRT, people would just sort of be there because of XRT, and then you'd grab him and you put him in the studio.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And I was in really, really early, and sometimes you'd hear a knock on the door, and I remember that big storm door in the back. You were never there.
I was never at Belmont. This
big fire door, and people said like banging on it. It's like 7 in the morning on a Sunday, and I hear this boom, 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 boom. And I go to the back there and I said, "Who is it?" And I said, "Blondie." Like, "Who?" I said, "Blondie." Like, "Oh." And I open the thing, I peek out, and it's Blondie. Like, "Hi.
Hey.
Come on in.
Let's do a couple of minutes."
And in New Wave Pioneers. Yeah, huh. They're very, very nice.
It is just Smashing Pumpkins.
If you're a fan, I got a pair of tickets for you in just a moment. Keep it here. You got the score. If you're caller 6 to the Scores contest line right now, 312-591-6700, you win a pair of tickets to see Smashing Pumpkins Tuesday, August 14th at the United Center.
A couple of things from our first full day of the preseason NFL slate that I just kind of wanted to catch up with before we say goodbye for the weekend.
You see Saquon Barkley after he took
that
the ball?
That was quite literally the first thing
that didn't take long.
That I needed to get to.
Yep.
Sometimes you draft those big-time running backs, right? The guys who have all that kind of work in college, and you just get a calling fart is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you get. I think that kid's going to be really good. I know it's one game of the
Super
preseason.
Super Scout McKnight, you know, declared like Saquon Barkley really good.
There were people like his junior year, right, when things really started last year of college, second to last year of college, when things really started to click together and really started to, people were, well, I don't know.
It was Futek. Futek was always a detractor.
Why are there 72-yard games against Northwestern?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I get the questions. Like, they're valid and stuff, but, like, watch him against Nebraska. Watch him against USC. I mean, my God, the runs and the talent that kid put together.
It's the swerve.
I'm going to watch giant games this year.
It's the jump cut. It's the ability with both feet on the ground to go in either direction at top speed.
He'll give you feet.
He'll
give you feet.
He is someone who will give you feet.
Speaking of feet givers, I was so much more depressed than I thought I'd be. Went on that second series with the ones, right? It's the Bears 3-and-out.
Yeah.
They run the tunnel screen over to Anthony Miller.
And they're running into each other.
And they can't, the receivers in front of them can't get their stuff figured out to go block for, just give him, all he needed was one block to make something. I'm not saying he would have popped it for anything. I just wanted to see him be able to do something, be a playmaker, have a chance to do something.
I know. It was there.
They did nothing for him. They just completely whiffed. Both blocks just got completely screwed, and you got nothing. I got nothing. And what I had a checklist. I wanted to see Adam Shaheen get a couple of chances. Excellent. Well done. I wanted a good Ken Mastroli award winner for our second week of the done. Ryan Nall, fantastic. Deserved. Saw a little bit of motion. Great. We saw that. Trey Burton moved around a little bit.
Jet sweep action.
Saw a little jet sweep. Got that. I needed Anthony Miller with the ball in his hands. I did not get that. I need Kevin White to hold the ball when it does hit his hands. I did not get that either. So those are the two boxes I failed to check in my Bears preseason box-checking extravaganza.
Yeah, if you're just joining us on a Bears Friday, here's what I learned last night. That guy Fowler is still on the team even though I cut him. I thought I cut him. I tweeted out that I cut him, and yet he was still there. Apparently something went wrong where I didn't get the paperwork to the league, or they're not listening to me. When I cut somebody, I expect that person to be gone.
He
was still there and still bad. Marcus Cooper is horrible, and I don't know what he is supposedly does well or what they saw in him, but he couldn't run. He couldn't tackle. He wasn't standing in the right places often enough, so I'm done there too. And Tyler Bray is just beyond bad. I mean, he's totally bad. But it's throw it within. I don't know if it says that in the scouting report, but that would be my scouting report on Tyler Bray is but.
I was in the Boy Scouts for like a week and a half, right?
I
did one.
Out?
Hold on, no. I did one camp. We moved like right. We did like the one big first camping trip or whatever, and then we moved, and then it was just like, all right, you're done with this, right? Yeah, I'm done with this. But there was the one kid like clearly going for his Eagle Scout. who was like, you know, the leader of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you're wondering why there are fewer people involved in Boy Scouts at this point, it's because no 16 or 17-year-old wants to lead a bunch of kids. You got plenty more things to do. That's part of it.
Yeah, there's other
stuff, but this kid was—he was a good guy. He was really into the whole thing, really into the camping thing. He wanted to sleep in like the single tent. It was his whole thing. But then he would—you know—he had to teach. He had to teach, like, you know, how to whittle and knife skills or whatever, all the outdoor wilderness stuff. I wasn't really paying attention. But the one thing he did say was, you know, as he's—you know—as as you use the knife to like shape branches and stuff, you're supposed to push the knife away from you. You know, never bring the knife toward you because that's bad. It's the knife coming. But he's using the knife coming toward him. And he looks at all of us and goes, yeah, I know what I said. Do what I say, don't do what I do.
Yeah, you should always be pushing away with the
knife. I'm hoping that's the teaching method for Tyler Bray. Do as I say, not as I do.
You know, okay, Mitch, what you want to do is when you have a guy wide open in the end zone, throw it 10 feet over his head.
See the ankles? See Kevin White's ankles?
Gotcha.
Throw it there. Right. Throw it at his ankles.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's just... You better not be in a position... As Hub said... If your third-string quarterback is playing, your season's over anyway.
Unless you're maybe the Ravens. I don't know. Wouldn't you like to see Lamar Jackson play a little bit if you're the Ravens? I can't think of any other. I'm sure there's one more team, but you're right. The third-string quarterback's no good. I do have one more little kudos to throw out there. Maybe it was just me. And I hate to overreact to one game of the preseason. But can I throw kudos to Adam Amin?
He's excellent.
He was terrific.
Yeah, he's got a great voice.
And he's got a great voice. He does a real smooth, great broadcast. And for what it's... I understand...
But I miss Sam Rosen.
I do not. All across
really
the league...
Either. I just like him.
All across the league, these broadcasts are home broadcasts, right? They are...
Correct. They're PR.
They're PR broadcasts. And that's fine. I got no problem with that. But Adam Amin, not only, you know, because we saw him do the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship where Notre Dame hit that, and he's got a fantastic call of that. He's been all over the place. He's like Benetti was last season, just calling everything. It was
not
him
handsome.
And Adam Amin. Adam Amin made a PR broadcast sound like a real broadcast. And I'm sure there are other guys who do that. I'm sure there are other guys who manage that. He was great.
I think he knew exactly how to hit the tone that he's employed by the team.
Yes, he gets that.
And I think he knew how to hit that tone without thinking we're stupid. And that's really, really hard to do. It is especially hard to do in your very first game. Sometimes it takes time. You go in this direction, you go in that direction. But for him to find that balance in that way was really impressive.
Just the whole opening setup. And even, you know, even Jim Miller in the open. I don't know if you saw any of the setup to it. I was cooking. I was making a couple of burgers. Which, by the way, I made two burgers. I was going to set one aside for lunch this afternoon. And as soon as Ryan Nall made that run down the side, I'm like, oh, the hell with that. Ryan Nall just won the Mastroli. I'm having the second burger.
You celebrated his capturing of the Bernstein and McKnight Mastroli Award.
I went right up to the oven and pounded that
really?
Thing.
See,
absolutely.
I did the four Vienna beef jumbo hot dogs.
Nothing wrong
and
with that.
And not only that, remember what I said about having used the saute pan that had the skirt steak in it and then had the burger in it?
Yes.
I still hadn't washed it, and I did the hot dogs in that pan. So now, completely unwashed, that very same pan has created the sauteed skirt steak, the ground beef for cheesy peasy burger mac, and now hot dogs, and it is still on top of the
you
stove.
You cook like a college student with money. That's what you do.
With money? With the skirt steaks?
Yeah, no, just with the ability to do some really good stuff and then leave a pan out for a week and still cook in it.
Well, my wife's
without washing.
Away.
Yeah. And now you get the kids back, so that life is
one
over.
One kid is back, and orange.
Kid 2 comes back orange today, right?
No, kid 2 won't be orange, I don't think.
Do we know that?
I don't know if he showers enough at camp for the water to affect him that way. It's going to be more lake water.
The one other thing I was going to say about Amin, in the lead-up to the game, the couple of minutes beforehand, Jim made him, you know, he's a hometown guy. He's calling a game for his hometown team. And just the way he went about doing it, like, yeah, this is my hometown team. I'm really excited to call. But it didn't feel... like pandering. It felt like a, hey, here's a guy who's doing a thing, and now here's the game. I respected the hell out of that.
And, you know, I love Jim Miller. I will say this, too. And once I tell you this, you can't unhear it.
Okay.
Jim Miller, you know, we always joke about football. You guys like to say football. Football guys say in football.
Football play.
It's a sport in which, for whatever reason, people who talk about football and work in football feel they have to say football all the time.
More
it's
football.
It's a crutch. A football player, a football play. I got a good football team. We know what to do with football. Jim takes it to another level. He loves saying National Football League.
Now I
that's what you're
going to
get in
that.
The National Football League.
Now I can't unknow that.
Right. See, now I think that's what he's going to learn playing in the National Football League. Well, this is what you're going to see this year in the National Football League. That's the kind of thing in the National Football League. He loves saying, not NFL, National Football League. The imprimatur of that, like to stamp things by hearing yourself say National Football League. It brings legitimacy and strength and branding power.
This reminds me of the day when I was doing the McNeil and Spiegel show, and McNeil goes, he first makes the first mention I'd ever thought of where Sim says Denver.
Oh, I know, Denver.
And now I can't unhear it. I cannot unhear it.
And pronouncing all
him.
Of
the words like that.
Yeah, the other Phil Sims word is
Denver.
Eem.
Yeah,
there's the word him, H-I-M, is pronounced E-E-M.
Ugh.
Eem and Denver. Yes.
Neil did that to me, and it has not left.
This portion of Bernstein and McKnight is brought to you by Northwestern Football. The Wildcats, coming off a 10-win season, host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single-game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. And speaking of hosting, here's a chance for you right now. If you are caller 6 to the Scores Contest line, 312-591-6700, you will be able to host your fantasy football draft in a private suite at Soldier Field on August 18th. Food and beverages are included. A panel discussion with Score experts is included. It's brought to you by Dykstra, piecing together your home comfort and fantasy football teams.
If you think about it this way, if you're in a serious league and interested in doing that, out at Soldier Field, and you're the commissioner of that league, it's such a thankless job. It's a job where everybody just hates you from the beginning of the season.
Even with like League Safe and all the apps,
yeah, everybody still hates you. Everybody still hates you because you're the commissioner, and clearly you're doing something wrong. You're not administering the league right. This is quite literally the one thing you can do that for a day would make your league not hate you anymore. As a commissioner, you could do this for your guys, for your family. And you could make your league not hate you for just the briefest of moments. And then after the draft, when you screw up something on the input or you screw up a database or a transaction log, then they'll hate you again. But for a moment, for a brief shining moment, you could be that commissioner. You could be the man Roger Goodell thinks he is every day.
Is this true? There is a text from the 815. It says, Bernstein, your kitchen sounds like that restaurant in Memphis that cooks burgers in 100-year-old grease. Is that real?
I don't know. I assume it will be on the next issue of the I'm Fat podcast if it exists.
What if that? What a great
I've never
gimmick
heard of
that
it.
Is. I've not either. But
Memphis, you say?
So they allow every next burger cook to contribute to whatever is there. I am. I actually think that there is a market inequity.
Oh my God!
In understanding like the quality of the pan or the sautéed hamburger. Everyone loves a flame-grilled hamburger. And I get it, and it sounds good, and there is a certain char on there. But I have to admit that when I was a little kid growing up, there was nothing for me like when my mom would make hand-patted burgers
right.
in a sauté pan.
You know, that's what I made last night, and I need help. Every time I cook these things, they're not patties. I want thin patties.
You got to start way too thin. If you push it so far down, right, because it ends up being like a baseball.
Yes, yeah, and I don't want that because bun integrity is impossible.
Trust me, you're not starting thin enough.
Okay.
You've got to start way too thin, and it's going to end up sort of seizing up into a burger that you envision.
Okay.
Trust me.
All right. And yes, there is. Burgers cooked in 100-year-old grease. It's at Dyer's in Memphis. So
wow, nice pull.
Show trip.
Thanks to everybody involved with our broadcast today at Gallagher Way. We thank Matt Spiegel for his help in the ballpark.
Good to see him today.
Helping to put one of our guests on. We thank our engineer, Dan Hibbets. Brian Gertsch had the video feed. Joe Ostrowski, the updates. The producers, Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, and Eli Hershkovich. Great slate of guests, too. Hub Arkish, the Mastroli Award winner for week 2, Ryan Nall, was kind enough to join us. David Bote, the aforementioned Chicago Cub, was delightful.
Good to talk to
really,
David Bote.
Really, just talking about lighting up a room. That
I'm
was
telling
great.
You, he's changing minds.
And Jonah Carey joined us as well. So have a terrific weekend. We got kind of a long weekend continuing the party on Monday.
That's right.
Because we are going to be at the Joe Madden Respect 90 Golf Outing at Bryn Mawr Country Club. We talk about surprises, and we're going to just be running after people and grabbing people. You won't want to miss a minute as we're going to have everybody on. So keep it right here for Chicago Cubs baseball.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.